What is up? It is Tuesday night, January 24, 2012. This is episode 28 of Inside the Game, and I'm DJ Wheat, joined by, of course, our regular EG In Control. And this is your second appearance now, I believe, Machine. Is that accurate?
Yep. It's my second time on. Glad to be here again.
And so Idra is not going to be with us tonight, but keeping it locked down in the EG household, of course, In Control and Machine. So thank you, Machine, for stepping in. In Control, what is up, buddy? How you been?
Doing well, man. Good to hear your voice. We've been New Year brings on a lot of busy bodies, so I know that we've been kind of a little bit inconsistent in the few weeks before, but I'm, you know, a lot of people have been asking. I think we're gonna straighten it out. We're gonna keep going.
It's already kind of started off. Well, and you got a quick kickoff because you went to Home Story Cup right away, right?
Yeah. So
that was like, you get to rest. It's the time off, but then suddenly there's an event right around the corner. So,
yeah,
I imagine. But I want to talk a little bit about that later. I haven't really gotten a chance, other than a few other individuals online, to talk about anyone who was there. And so definitely want to do that. And then Machine, while Home Story Cup was about ready to kick off, we were actually at CES together. I had a great time with Machine. It was an absolute blast. Why don't you tell them what we were doing out there?
We were working one of the booths with InWin, our K sponsor, and basically got to go out there and do a bunch of exhibition matches where then like a three-day period, pretty much I got to play a bunch of people, and if they lasted 20 minutes, I got a prize. And if they beat me, they got a extremely like big prize. I think the prize was like a case or something like that.
They were getting those 900 watt InWin glaciers that were pretty. They were pretty badass, dude. Everyone was like, you know, you'd think about they had Kingston RAM and then these Glacier power supplies, and you would think like, dude, RAM is like any guy can get some RAM, his buddy can put it in. Yeah. But every single time, if someone had a choice, it was like, I want that power supply. It's like you can run 8 video cards with it and shit.
It
was out of control. Yeah.
But yeah, I got to go to Vegas and hang out with you. It was a lot of fun.
It was. I learned a lot from Machine that whole time. And you know, I got to make a confession right away. Like, Rice will actually say this. He probably caught me doing it a couple times. But you know, I did the shootouts with Jeff at PAX. And so I just got in this sort of like show mentality of like rolling off and then saying EG In Control. And like there were so many times where I threw out In Control like so many times.
Jeff, I was like, oh man.
Time I'm like, I'm such a dick.
It would be worse if you said Idra, I think.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I here's Idra. And you're like, ha 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 ha. Wheat's making fun of Bryce again.
No, it wasn't like that. It was muscle memory in my head. But it was pretty funny. And then also, I want to talk about one of the guys that actually pulled off the very difficult task of holding out for 20 minutes versus Machine. Because
exactly
this to me is like, this is one of these crazy, like Rudy-esque, Disney might make a movie about it type stories where this guy, his name was Jude, and like you would meet this kid and you would instantly be like, dude, this kid is like the nicest dude in the world. Like, you know, he is just that guy. If a car was coming straight for me, Jeff, I feel like Jude would like knock me out of the way and take the blow and shit. Like, so anyway, Jude comes around and the first day he just expresses an enormous amount of interest in wanting to actually play with Machine. And, you know, he's like, oh, this is great. And unfortunately, I don't have much time today. So what he did is he sat back and he watched quite a bit. And, came back the next morning and he was like, hey, so, you know, I'd really like to get in. And we gave him this thing of a fast pass so he could come back. And when he came back, he sat down and you could just tell like he was ready for something, right? So his build was, he played Terran and his build was like, to start off, like pretty standard, I think, right, Machine? I mean,
yeah, just standard, like one Rax expand or like maybe Hellion expand.
Yeah, he was one of the few guys, I think, who tried to poke you with some Hellions, right? Yep. And so it was all normal. And then he throws down a starport, and then he throws down a tech lab. And so it's like, oh, he's, you know, maybe he's going to transition into Banshees. But what he starts doing is he starts producing Ravens. right? Yep. And the first one comes out, and it's just like, okay, well, let's see what he's going to do with that. And he gets like two or three out, and he gets a little cutesy with it, and he like throws down some auto turrets, and like Bryce totally cleans that shit up, no problem, you know. But as the game progresses, like Raven number 10 comes out, Raven number 11, Raven number 12, right? And so the end game for most of this was all coming down to Bryce having a massive mutable and him destroying everything. So what Jude did is in the final moments of the game, he dropped seven racks in his base, and he just flew and split his seven racks. And people had tried the fly method, but it had never worked. But what he did is then he took his 15 fucking Ravens and he moved them to the upper northwest corner. And the moment a minute it was left on the clock, he dropped like 50 PDDs down.
Oh my God. That was hilarious.
Yeah. And it was just like, dude, you win just from creativity. Like he definitely thought it out and was like, this is what I'm going to go for. And Poe, obviously super excited about that
story.
She really
hates
as well.
Ravens. Like Ravens, we've had this talk with Poe before. Yeah. She feels like, when people discover how good the Hunter Seeker missile is and the point defense drone, it's just going to be ridiculous.
Yep. It was pretty good.
Defender of gravity.
Yeah. So I totally give that guy some mad props. Yeah. The other guys were just Protoss.
Yep.
But
it was so funny. I remember flying up there with like 50 mutas and then just seeing all the PDDs and then everything just clicked at once. I'm like, oh my God. Like, that actually was what he was going for this whole time, wasn't it? Then just sitting and watching 50 mutas do nothing to a barracks is hilarious.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was like watching Sixth Sense. You're like, fucking Memento. I was like, I didn't write it down. So it's been a lot of fun. But that was pretty cool. Met a lot of cool guys. A lot of fans of the show. So hopefully they're tune in tonight, but thanks to Edwin for that. I had a good time.
Those things are pretty amazing, and it's one of the cool ways, like, there may very well never be an MLG at Vegas. You know, there probably, maybe, might be something else, but it's such a cool opportunity for people to go out and experience that, like playing against Machine in that event, meeting, you know, DJ Weed, so keep your eyes on the pavement, or your ears on the pavement, I guess, and listen for more stuff like that, like PAX East, PAX Prime, CES.
Which are really good for those types of things because there's like, you know, 80% more gamers. Because that's the one thing is that there's not a whole lot of gamers at CES. There's gamers, but, you know, it was actually pretty tough to get people to line up shit. At PAX, it was just like zing, 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 zing. I mean, you couldn't make them go away quick enough. So
PAX was amazing. I hope the stars have aligned and MLG doesn't conflict with PAX this year because that was, I don't know, I felt like that was a really momentous occasion. And I would love it if we could all do that up again.
It was definitely cool, definitely awesome. I look forward to that as well. So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to chat about tonight. And I happen to be one of the benefits of working at Twitch means that I get to literally wake up in the morning and sit around and watch streams all day. You know, it whatever, it's in the background. I get to enjoy a lot of StarCraft, and I watch Mr. In Control's stream every once in a while, and I happen to be watching his stream, and this really great topic came up, and it actually got me to think, not only because I sort of have been in the situation before, having like streamed and having people like tell you, talk about your play, your game, etc. But then I was also thinking about there's a lot of people out there that have practice partners. But sometimes it actually can be really tough to tell your buddies like what they might be doing wrong or how to approach them on, you know, on something. So, you know, I thought it'd be actually a great topic to discuss, and I know I kind of like threw this one on at the last minute, so hopefully you guys have some thoughts on it. But, you know, Jeff, obviously I want to you know, start with you, because really you got me to thinking about all this really, and it was you talking about the difference between what you felt was strong criticism that you could actually look at and go, yes, look here, I was supply blocked for an entire minute, whatever, versus something that is really vague, doesn't help you, or, you know, do you think you could, like, rewind a little bit and talk about what you were talking about on your stream?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's pretty familiar with the concept of a big part of the reason why people watch streams is because it's a nice opportunity to see someone play the game, but then also have the opportunity to interact with them. And a lot of times that interaction is, let's reflect on that game you just played. You know, I've got my ideas, you've got yours. Why did you do that? You know, do you think that this would have been better? And I think what's really important for people to remember in that facet of the game is just that when you're watching someone stream, it's a huge turnoff, and you're not going to get your message across when you bark at them like, that was stupid, make Colossus, you know, or something like that. And it's interesting because a lot of people, their blanket response to that is ignore the chat. You know, let trolls be trolls. And I don't think everyone's a troll, and I don't think ignoring the chat's the way to go. A lot of times, the strength and the attraction of a streamer is the guy who interacts with his stream chat, right? That's actually a pull. So I was kind of bringing up the topic just to say, like, look, if you honestly have critical ideas and advice, there's certain ways to go about it. You don't want to yell at the guy and say, that was fucking stupid, you need to do this, because they're not going to listen to you now. You should say, hey, what do you think about this? And they may or may not listen, but at least you have a chance to convey ideas, and then they'll talk back with you, and then everyone learns, right? So the good example of that is if you watch EG practice, we're doing that just about every single day, Machine doesn't say to me, like, wow, that was a totally idiotic build you did. End of statement. You know, he says, I think that you could have optimized it this way. What do you think about this? And then sometimes myself, the Muslim, as a gamer, somebody will go like, no, actually, you know, here's the reason why I did that. But everyone listening hears the back and forth and the discourse, the pros and cons. And even if you don't agree with it, just hearing the ideas behind both allows you to arrive at a better place. So, I mean, the whole reason I was bringing it up is because there's so much more progress for us to be had, even as simple as just being a stream chat audience member, all the way up to being a pro gamer streaming their games. There's the interaction's important, and then how we do it's important, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I actually agree with everything that you said. I want to talk with Machine a little bit about it. Obviously, you stream as well, been doing the EG practice stuff. What are your thoughts on that? And then maybe even add Machine, when you are working in a team environment, you know, what's the best, I guess, course of action if you want to, you know, express your thoughts or opinions about something that InControl is doing or something that you think may help him?
Honestly, you kind of just need to realize that any sort of criticism I give him, like, you know, it's just going to be beneficial one way or another. Maybe he does look at it, and maybe we do figure out it's not as efficient as I kind of thought it was. But either way, just like Jeff said, at least we looked at it, you know, we thought about it. I realized that, you know, a lot of the times when people actually need criticism, you know, they're not quite in the element to kind of receive it. If you just go and lose to the same exact build order about 10 games in a row, you're clearly going to be pretty frustrated. But, you know, we've kind of realized that we're just doing this, you know, to get better. And unless we take that criticism, analyze it, and apply it to our play, we're just going to our play is going to be stagnant. We're not really going to improve. So all the criticism that we're doing and that we're allowing everyone to kind of view in these stream sessions, you know, it's extremely important, and it's greatly helping our play, as you guys can see, just in a couple of weeks. It's been pretty good for us.
So in talking, like, from a perspective of, you know, I play with my buddy all the time, right? And he's always a Protoss, and I'm always a Zerg, and, like, maybe even there's something that I do or I see all the time. So from a team perspective, I'm sure that's something that you really have to work on and get good at and sort of, like, expressing that. So do you have any advice for anyone in, you know, a way to give proper criticism as far as that's concerned?
You know, I guess really just try to make the criticism beneficial and definitely, like, try to think it out with them. Or if you're not exactly sure on something and maybe you're, you know, it's just an idea, then treat it as just an idea. Don't say this is fact. Say, hey, let's think about this, let's analyze it, and let's practice it, and then let's come out with, you know, an answer to the question. So you don't have to necessarily know for a fact that this is going to benefit your play. You know, it could just be an idea. There's a lot of builds that, you know, me, Jeff, Ben talk over where we're like, huh, you know, I wonder what would happen if we tried this. And we just go ahead and we try it. We don't even necessarily know if it's going to benefit our play or not, but one way or another, at least we've analyzed the situation, dealt with it, and then come to a conclusion.
then my very simple advice would just be open-minded. You know, it's one thing to hear brilliant tactical minds like an Axe Slav, or, you know, if you ever get the chance to hear Sock talk about StarCraft II, I mean, EG Practice, those are good places to hear really high-level, good banter, good conversation, you know, a good discourse. And I don't want people to think like, well, me and my buddies, we're platinum or we're gold and we can't have that discussion. Absolutely not. Like, the most important part about StarCraft is that you pool minds together. That's why, like, people talk about free content. The Day 9 Daily is great.
One of the
big things is we have, you know, inside the game, you can call in and ask questions. You can actually create opportunities for that high-level banter. But even amongst your friends, just have the open mind. Like, if he goes, yeah, you know, when I foregate, I stop at 16 probes, and I make my third pylon next to his base. And if the friend goes, well, I actually really don't like that style, because if they pick off that third pylon, you've actually hedged your bet so much that now you're really, really behind. And whether the other guy agrees with them or not, if they both are open-minded and talk about the concepts, I mean, one of the most beneficial things I learned from debate was the value in discourse. I cannot agree with someone, but if they give me a really really well-informed perspective on their reasoning, then I've learned something on that day. And maybe I agree with them at the end of it, or maybe I don't. But it also helps me formulate a better opinion for me too on my side. Like, I'm now bouncing ideas off a better concept of the argument against my point, right? So that's like the most eloquent way to put that. But the way what I'm trying to say is, it's just really important that people talk about StarCraft. Bryce and I coach people all the time, not because they necessarily like absolutely have to have the coaching, but because they have nobody to talk StarCraft with. So
right.
If you have those people, use them and just be open-minded, and it will benefit everybody.
I mean, I would just go out so far out to say, I feel like anytime you can talk to anyone who is better than you, then you're like in a great situation. I mean, I'll be honest. When I was in Vegas with Machine, there was definitely, you know, I was asking him a lot of shit, dude. I walked away from there doing my queen injections a whole different way, you know, and that was because I got a chance to ask. He actually was giving me criticism, you know, and sometimes if you go out looking for it, That's the best way to get it.
One last thing I'd like to say too is there's like, it's kind of cool because on this subject, it's not like, this is not what you'd hear from every player. Maybe you would hear it, but they don't adhere to it. Like, there's actually a lot of players, I could drop names, but obviously that's not what we're here to do, of people who don't take advice. They right, don't want to listen to other people, and they have trouble in their game. And I'm talking about people all the way at the top of this game. They're obviously talented, they're obviously brilliant, they're amazing players, but when they close themselves off to outside help, it stagnates, as Bryce said, their development. And then on the flip side, I can name a player like Huck, one of the most accomplished foreign Protoss players on the planet, who, in the middle of an important match at MLG, will step out of the booth and ask me for advice, and we'll talk Protoss. Is he asking me because I'm better than him? Absolutely not. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you I'm not as good as him or better, right? But at the end of the day, him hearing ideas and bouncing them off of me and talking with me about it makes him a better player. And that same idea can be replicated in every team house, at every tournament, with every pairing of players.
Sure.
It's just really important that players understand, and people watching players, or just, you know, maybe you're not a player, maybe you're just a casual player. Talking about the game will make you better, and that's really important.
Good thoughts. It was kind of funny because as you were talking about it, I was having the discussion with Machine. I was like, Greg doesn't use this inject method. And so we started having the conversation you know, just like, how do you convince him to do that? Because it just seems like it would be so much better. But anyway, I'm sure that even amongst teammates, there's certain ways that people do certain things, and you have to take that into consideration too. Anyway, we could probably micro on that a little bit more, but I don't think any particular need to. Good stuff. And I want to go back just real quickly to one of the points you made early on, Jeff, and that was just the fact that, like, in this sort of new era, having that instant feedback is not something that we've had pretty much ever in gaming. So it is different. It is... you know, and when it also becomes like a part of the sort of culture to be interactive, you know, that's a little bit of a catch 22 anyway. So yeah. I appreciate the fact that, you know, you bring it in there, Katz brings it in there, Sheth brings it. You know, there are a lot of guys that just stream, and that's kind of it. And that's cool too, but I'm personally more of a fan of a little bit of interaction.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And it comes at a cost. Like, people are so quick to say, you know, ignore the trolls and stuff. Like, any time, because no matter what stream chat you go to, there's going to be the guy who's trying to get attention by saying something electrifying, you know, or mean or whatever. And there's certain degrees of that. Like, there's someone who's just going off about how, like, you should die and, you know, they hate you. You just ban that person. But then there's someone who's like, that was a stupid build. Sometimes I'll take the time to explain to them what they should, you know, the way they should go about it and why it's not stupid for the benefit of other people. And I think the more streams that do that, the more people will be interested in said streamers. And I think that's good for everyone.
I totally agree. I absolutely agree. And I definitely don't think that not, you know, that everyone should just immediately start having an interactive stream. I could imagine a few streamers that wouldn't work out too well with, but
an Hydra stream. Oh my God. No, you're actually just a faggot.
Yeah. You have to say the person's dumb twice for every, like, the person he's playing is dumb and everyone he's talking to is dumb.
Oh, it'd be pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. So yeah, anyway, when we open up the phone lines, something you want to ask about, talk a little bit more about, that will certainly be a possibility. Move on to pretty much, let's actually move on to this first. I wanted to see if I had a video of it. And it's so funny because I've been seeing all these posts, you know, it's like stacking, 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 StarCraft 2, they're stacking, oh my God. And all I could think about is like little kids doing that cup stacking and like super quick competitions. And
yeah.
So that's what stacking is. I was asked once if I knew what stacking was, and I didn't. And they were like, it's stacking cups, man. So I didn't have my video ready for stacking. But have you guys seen this? Stacking what? In StarCraft 2?
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar. Yeah. I mean,
I actually haven't.
You haven't?
I've told Bryce about it. It's the same kind of stuff that happened in Brood War. And, I mean, we're going to have a discussion about this, I'm sure. But there are obtrusive, harming mistakes in a game that obviously need to be banned and removed. And then there's ones where it actually functions. So the smartass out there is going to be like, well, you could stack Mutalisks in Brood War. Completely different than stacking 30 tanks into one space, right? So this is something that you won't see in competition. It should be removed. But if they discovered that, you know, you could micro the crap out of a Thor and he could actually shoot both his arms at two separate targets or something like that, maybe that's kind of cool.
Yeah, good point.
You haven't, you haven't seen this, the videos then, Machine?
No, I have not. What can you stack?
What?
What can you stack?
Well, first off, I have to show this Asian kid stacking cups really quick. Okay, that's stacking, bitches, right there. Yeah, 5 seconds. Oh my God, amazing!
Holy shit,
amazing, crazy.
It's the world record right there.
It is like the world record.
And you know what?
Genius.
It is so worthless.
What do you mean?
He's gonna be the best dishwasher.
Oh my God.
In some restaurant food chain.
Oh shit, dude. Someone actually asked for a replay and I feel obligated. I feel obligated, you guys. So one more time. There it is. Look at that. It almost looks like he is in the Matrix. Bullets are flying all around him.
His parents, like, they're like,
I feel like, what?
Get in your room and stack those cups. Competitions in 1 week.
I want him
damn well.
He needs to work a little bit more on his celebration, though. I felt like it was just, you know, arms in
the
air. We've seen it before. Oh yeah, fuck your clock, man. There we go. Okay, so stacking. There's been, first off, the first stacking that we saw was people building supply depots and then dropping like 30 tanks into one 2x2 area, and then like sieging all 36 tanks right on top of one another.
Oh wow!
And then people were like, "Oh well, look, you can just make a ring of marines, and then you can like make it just the perfect size, and you can drop tanks inside." I'm going to see if I can find a video here. So now people are finding out that you can use the stacking to push units off the map. And a long time ago, there was a bug where you could push a Colossus like out of a Robo, and then it could make it walk underneath. It's kind of like that, but I watched Dragon do it. He had a tank like burrowed underneath a guy's natural, and he would just scan there, and it would just start pounding on his SCVs. And there's a whole other conversation there as to Dragon should be banned because he was using an exploit, but I have to say it was pretty goddamn funny, and I don't think the guy was going to win anyway. But Jeff, we're definitely going to talk a little bit about the Brood War side of it, because this is something that did happen before, right? So first off, you think this is going to see a quick fix or what?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have any place in competition, and it's an error in the game that, I mean, the comparison would be made to things like hold lurkers. For people that weren't familiar, if you actually burrowed a lurker and then paired it with an overlord and hit hold position for whatever reason, because it was paired with that overlord, when you hit hold position, it would actually now not, it would not shoot. So this would create opportunities where like a pack of marines could wander over a presumably safe location, and then boom, they get hit by a bunch of lurkers. That was kind of cool because it didn't absolutely break the game. It was something that you could actually do outside of that bug. If you just held stop or tapped, you know, spam stop a lot on that lurker, it would do the same thing. Of course, it required more actions. Stack Mutilus, that was something that, again, made the game more exciting because it rewarded the player that played better, right? Like, if I stack my Mutas and then I have amazing micro, then it's really cool. If I stack 30 tanks on top of each other, there's no amount of frickin' micro that makes that cool. It's just a guy who walks up, thinks there's one tank, and gets shat on by 30 tanks that have... They have, like, a smart fire, too, right? So they're not actually shooting one guy. They're perfectly shooting a row of people.
God.
So
yeah.
It doesn't have a place in the game. It doesn't reward the better player. It's just it's an exploit. It's a bug. And it would make competition stupid.
And so, you know, obviously we haven't heard anything about a fix, but you're right. Seeing all these videos and all the different stuff that can actually... you know, can actually be done with it. Like I said, there's now then the ability to push units off the map and put it in there. But it's something to at least be aware of. And it brings on a more interesting topic in that, you know, how long has the game been out for? You know, people even say it's like we're seeing the same stuff and it's just the metagame changing and blah, blah, blah. But we're still seeing discoveries. Can you talk with us and relate a little bit from your guys' Brood War experience, having anything like this, like what you mentioned?
Well, you know, there's a lot of bugs, you know, particularly in Brood War. I'm sure Jeff remembers being able to walk High Templars over, you know, islands and storm your opponents, you know, naturals and such. Drone stacking, SUV stacking towards the end.
Command center slide.
Command center slide, so you can slide them right next to the minerals. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, bugs, particularly in Brood War. And the reasons why, you know, specific ones will stick, and the reasons why specific ones won't is purely just to do with imbalance here. As Jeff said earlier, if you could stack 30 siege tanks on top of each other, especially in StarCraft II with smart fire, it's just imbalance. It's too, you know, too much DPS stuck in one little field there. So, you know, we are going to continue to see bugs here, you know, especially in Heart of the Swarm once, you know, you start adding even more units. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of the bugs weren't fixed, just like in Brood War. But, you know, some of them are clearly going to have their problems and imbalances and not going to be allowed to stay in the game.
Right. I mean, I just find it fascinating that, you know, game can probably go on another couple years, right? And someone will find something else, some cutesy little thing you're going to be able to do or you know, a very popular something in a map, the way it's done, and someone will figure, you know, that out as well. And we've seen a lot of that evolution. And to be quite frank with you, and I know that I'm just pretty much like a StarCraft baby compared to you guys, but you just don't see that very often in a whole lot of games. You know, you look at something like Quake 3, and you could name on your hand like all of the bugs that exist in the game. And I think, you know, other than geometry, it's like you never found anything, you know, that was considered a bug like this. But with so much going on and so much to do, it's just amazing. And I appreciate the fact that this discovery still, you know, consistently and constantly will happen.
Yep. Jeff, remember Spider-Mine stacking towards the end?
Yeah.
Just wait for two Spider-Mines stack on top of each other, shoot the one, it just shoots across the map, explodes. Oh, God, that was awesome.
Another one that was outlawed was actually a lot of tournaments were played in custom games, so you could actually ally yourself to your opponent.
Oh, God.
And if you allied yourself to your opponent, there could be a full minefield laid down by vultures, and then they'd unally the second the person walked like in the midst of it, and they got blown up. That, too, was outlawed because that's just stupid.
That's actually quite hilarious. I mean, no one ever got away with anything like that, right? Other than it's like your buddy
making...
There'd
be like the one tournament where that shit would happen. Everybody would be like, oh, my God. And then after that, they're like, never again.
Just like Dragon here. They can't ban Dragon. You know, he's technically not doing anything that's against the rules. But if from then on they make the rule, hey, you know, you guys can't stack your tanks below ground or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. By the way, I do not agree with anything like that. There are much worse individuals that deserve to get attention over moving one tank in one game. It was absolutely hilarious, though.
I agree.
It was so funny. Anyway, stacking. So you can watch a bunch of videos on YouTube. Just look up StarCraft II stacking. And it talks about all sorts of units. It did. The one guy that put the 36 siege tanks and then ran like 100 zerglings into it actually didn't end up that great. It's kind of interesting. I'll have to see if I can find that video. There's a shitload of lings, but a lot of them are out there. So let's talk a little bit about events, and then let's go ahead and open up the phone lines because we know that everyone loves it when we do that. So, first and foremost, some events. We just had I Am Kiev over the weekend. And then, of course, at the very beginning of the year, you're at Home Story Cup 4. And I'd actually love to just quickly talk a little bit about Home Story Cup 4. And, I mean, I know you've chatted about it on State of the Game. I know that you've chatted about it on your stream as well. But for anyone who may not have seen either of those, what is the sort of three paragraph you're going to sell me on why Home Story Cup 4 was just the shit?
Some people might see me trying to fix my webcam. Sometimes it gets all grainy like that. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but I was just explaining why I covered it for a second to try to reset it. Home Story Cup 4 was absolutely amazing because it was a full-on competitive tournament. The prize pool is up there with some of the, you know, the years past biggest tournaments. The players that attended had some of the best players possible. But then Home Story Cup, just like a lot of the other tournaments, you know, much like the couch at DreamHack and the red carpet at NASL and then MLG's just overall big, you know, audience, Home Story Cup didn't have those things, but what it did have was it had players commentating games, players having a good time on camera, and a really relaxed atmosphere. And I'll tell you what, I mean, the year past, or... excuse me, Home Story Cup 3, I'm not sure if that was a year ago, but a while ago, we had some EG guys there, the Muzzle Major machine, and I watched, and I was jealous as all get out, man. They had such a good time. And having attended in Home Story Cup 4, the expectation lived up to be true. I'll tell you what, like, hanging out with some of my favorite players / friends, getting to commentate these amazingly high-level games with other players for a spin-off the norm, was just amazing. And then, you know, playing the games, I had JYP helping me with ideas and coaching me. I had a really fun, difficult group, so it was a big challenge, and I just couldn't have asked for a better tournament, to be honest with you.
And I think, like, all of the points that you mentioned there are certainly one of the reasons why it was, it's just one of the most sought-after tournaments, and we've talked about it on other shows. It's really something that you just can't duplicate, you know? Like, no one's going to be able to come around and go, I've got my own Home Story Cup, you know. Yeah. It truly is unique and original, and of course all the new things that were added. The other thing that I was really interested in that not a whole lot of people have talked about is the fact that the whole thing takes place right above a pub.
Yeah.
So there is this like sort of cool access to fans and stuff, and they had cool access to you guys. Like, how much did you get to interface with that? And because I mean, to me, I'm still, I still get like those Artosis nerd chills when I think about Barcraft and just how awesome that was for me. And I went to a relatively small Barcraft, but it was just so amazing. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Oh, it was, it's just amazing for me. Like, I would get there every day at about 10 a.m. and I would stay until 1 or 2 a.m. So it was a long day of just pure StarCraft, casting, having fun, all that stuff. And for the first couple days, I was really jet-lagged, so I was really tired. But people would come up from the Barcraft every time, and they'd be like, hey, in control, there's a lot of people down there that are really wanting to see you. And it just, like, I can't tell you how cool that is as a player and as a person just to hear that. Like, it was my first trip to Europe. It was my first event in Europe. It was a big deal. And there was people that were really excited to see me. So I'd go down there, and I would sign autographs, and there'd be this huge flock of people around me. And it just, I kept breathing in inspiration. I kept breathing in motivation. Like, it was just so amazing to be amongst so many people so excited about StarCraft and so happy just to spend time with me that, like, that particular aspect of that really makes the tournament. Because I'm trying to imagine just a bunch of guys hanging out in an apartment playing StarCraft. That's pretty cool. But to have the fan interaction and the, like, excitement of people screaming and shouting during the cool matches that are being aired downstairs, the two of them together are so essential and so important and so cool. So I mean, I feel silly because I just kind of rant and rave, and then at the end I just realized I've been ranting and raving, so I'm like, I don't know. All I would say is just amazing things.
No, I mean, I think that's all you really can say. There's nothing, there's honestly nothing that you can just say about it from the amount of content that was going out, the multiple streams as well. And those are the weekends that I'm always saying to myself, like, oh man, this weekend I'm gonna get all this shit done, and then the next thing I know, like, I'm in it to win it, like, the whole time, watching till the end. And to me, that's, you know, that's the sign of a great event. They make me not want to leave my seat, and there was so much. So I just want to give those guys another big shout out. Great job on a job well done. Of course, then IEM hits another home run this weekend with Kiev. With their new game lineup, including Counter-Strike, League of Legends, and, of course, StarCraft II. And it broke, you know, records as far as based off of the raw stats that they themselves pulled. They have a record-breaking online concurrent event that was certainly, you know, special in itself. So did you guys get a chance to watch any of it, or did you follow any of it? Or
I watched most of it, yeah.
And What do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, I was a little bit worried because at first it looked like that tournament was going to be robbed of its glory by drama. You know, there was the lag that occurred between Nanniwa and Straylock. There was Grubby announcing to the universities, filing to the celestial gods a complaint against IEM. So that kind of stuff was stealing the show on Reddit for a little while. People
really
were more concerned with the problems that were going on. But meanwhile, there was some pretty amazing stories. Feast doing amazing work in the tournament, really announcing himself as a player who's arrived. Damaga having yet another top finish. I mean, a lot of people, like, Damaga somehow slides under the radar. I'm not quite sure how. He's like, he should be undisputed one of the best foreign Zergs. I want to say as high up as like 3 or 4 in the top up there. But this is another tournament that just kind of shows that he's able to do it. You know, he took a game off of MMA, the first one, and was looking really strong, and then MMA was like, oh crap, I need to win this tournament, so I'll just turn on the Jets. But there's so many cool storylines, and I was just really excited to see another IEM event that started off a little bit rocky. I liked the way Carmack kind of handled it. He was like, hey, we double-checked, we triple-checked, I tried my best, some shit still happened, we're responsible, we're not going to try, you know, we want to do it better in the future, but we're going to put a show on. And I really like that response, by the way. Because he could have come out and said, it's not our fault, screw you haters, and then, like, ran off crying. But he didn't. He was like, yeah, you know, bring the pitchforks, is what he said, actually.
I mean, and specifically Carmack, who represents them in a lot of those situations, I think that's really smart to do because, you know, Carmack's not afraid to take it, guys. Like, it's one of the things, like, let's really give a round of applause to this guy, Carmack. Like, this guy has been busting his ass for years now in esports and competitive gaming. And, you know, like, Carmack is never afraid to be like, dude, I can handle this. You know, like, I will take that negativeness and try to turn it around. And he goes out on the line a lot, and I really, really appreciate that and have a lot of respect for that. I also want to say, Damaga, dude, I watch his stream a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of with you in that it's surprising, but not surprising. He's just an incredible player. I would have loved to see him win. I'm glad that he at least pulled one off of MMA. I also felt like Kaz, who traditionally has been known as sort of a guy with nerves, you know, like we've seen his online performances, really, really good. Been known at least in the past year. Well, obviously gone. Some great games out of him as well. But I would just say, you know, watch Damaga's stream if you ever get the opportunity to. Really, really interesting.
Yeah, and actually, I'll tell you what. I haven't met Kaz and I haven't spent any time with him, so I don't feel too comfortable being definitive about this. But when you watch him play online in some of these team leagues or just various different tournaments, I feel like he is the best foreign Terran. Like, he's just an absolute monster of a macro player.
Yeah.
When I watch him online, or excuse me, offline, as offline as we get, I really feel like there's still maybe some nerve issues. But again, you know, take what I say for a grain of salt. But I'm really interested in seeing him overcome that. I mean, I think this tournament's a step in the right direction. Taking third place.
Yep.
It was third place, right? Did he beat Zenyu?
Yeah, he did, I think.
Yep.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. And I hope that gives him the confidence that we need as foreigners to have yet another weapon out there that can take out Koreans in big tournaments.
It is impressive stuff. And I didn't know this, but did you know much about the venue where I Am Kiev took place?
I guess they used it for the championship only like 1 year prior.
It's actually a giant PC bang. Like it's specifically designed for that sort of event. It's kind of cool. I did not know that prior to the event taking place and didn't talk about it too much, but I was just doing a little bit of research and found that out. It's pretty sweet. But apparently they like actually have the dedicated internet, which was also one of the reasons why it was really confusing to them that they were having issues in one game but not the other, and stream was functioning and et cetera, et cetera. So they handled it great. Congratulations. It's awesome to see 2012 kick off like this. I think in 2011 we were all like, oh, we hope 2012 goes well. And so far, it's looking pretty solid. So, but the event season's coming up, you guys. Like, are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
I am, like, can I just take a minute to just gust on that too, please?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
I'm really happy with the MLG format. I think for them to go to this style, excuse me, I'm losing my voice somehow. I'm really excited about the arena. I think it's going to produce additional content. Four events as opposed to six means that there's more of a build-up. It feels more, like, I love the season idea. It starts to feel more like a OSL, MSL type of feel. Day 9 talked about this on State of the Game, how, like, with the arena and us being able to track the players' progression towards that tournament, we can have more definitive storylines. So I think MLG got better in the off-season, except for the fact that they somehow still left in extended series. Why? I don't know.
Right.
I can't say, and I'm going to do that thing that esports people are famous for, but I know a lot about what IPL's thinking and doing, and it's exciting. It's freaking awesome. They got better, too. They're going to have an amazing IPL 4, and hopefully it's going to launch them into additional events throughout the year. NASL, call me biased. Say I've got some kind of weird connection to them. I like what they're doing, too. The NASTL League looks fantastic.
It's been great.
It looks great. They've updated their studio. They're excited about new changes for the next season. I don't know anything about it, actually. They haven't told me. But the bottom line is these tournaments are getting better. And I actually got to talk to Too Good. I know he works with you and in Twitch Europe. And he was talking a lot about what DreamHack's going to be doing. DreamHack's going to get better, too. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, 2011 was amazing. All things on paper right now for 2012 are that they're going to blow it out of the water.
I agree, and yeah. I would just gush a little bit more along with you. I do like the season structure. Hopefully we're going to avoid conflicts, because that's always going to be probably one of the most scary things. Because, I mean, guys, eventually it's getting to the point where we're running out of weekends. You know, like, we literally may have a year-long schedule where traditionally in esports, it's almost been like April to November. And we have seen that November extending into December and even now into January. So eventually we're going to hit that. Otherwise, we're just going to keep having conflicts. And that is like just the worst. Just the freaking worst.
Like, they're going to happen. But what is important to me as a guy who's not working for an MLG, not working for an IPL or an ESL, none of that stuff. So I'm detached from those companies. What's really important to me is to hear a tournament. Gosh, dang it. Okay, so apparently I developed a smoking habit in the last 5 seconds. What's really important for me is the tournaments that come out and said, we talked to tournaments. We wanted to avoid conflicts.
Right.
Because that matters to me, that the fact that a tournament would try to do that. What's not okay to me, and I want consumers to be aware of this because this tactic does occur, is for the league that's like, nah, it's going to happen. And, you know, we set that schedule a long time ago, so just deal with it. That's not okay, and that shouldn't be okay to the consumer as far as I'm concerned. Like, if leagues are trying to separate themselves from other leagues, then they're playing fair as far as I'm concerned. Because you know what? It's not just better for the league. It's better for everyone when they're separated. I should, as a consumer, you know, let me take my player hat off. If I wanted to go watch a PAX East and attend that, but then also go to IEM such and such or MLG this, I should have those choices. But if you stack them on top of each other, I don't have choices. I guess I still have a choice, but I have one as opposed to three. You know what I mean? So I want leagues, because actually ASUS ROG or whatever,
right?
They're getting blasted by an MLG. I'm not saying it was on purpose. I'm not saying it was aggressive, but ASUS they came out and said, I want to start a forum where we can talk to each other so this kind of shit doesn't happen anymore. And I'd love it if every league was like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So we'll see.
Well, and you know, at the end of the day, we've mentioned this before, but the point has to be brought up is that in some cases, this is a business. Unfortunately, the people that get hurt the most are not necessarily even the spectators, because I can open up a second webpage, I can watch a second event. Who really gets hurt is the players, because it separates things out a little bit. It becomes a much more harder to judge. Sometimes there's qualification, you know, things on the line, so you have to attend one tournament, or maybe you don't get to qualify in an event because you have to pick and choose. And that's where I feel like it's really unfortunate that this stuff happens, because it affects the players more than anything. Yep.
Well, it also affects the leagues, right? They're just splitting views. Like, if IEM dropped an IPL or like MLG or something, you know, it doesn't make sense that they wouldn't really be talking to each other. You know, everyone's just hurt in the end of it.
Yeah. So let's cross our fingers and just hope that it's kept to a minimum. I can't see us going through a year without a major conflict. I just hate to be Mr. you know, devil's advocate, but I just think it's next to impossible. It really is. So we'll just have to hope for the best. I know there'll be a lot of stacking, a lot of back-to-back stuff, but that's how it is, man. That's,
you said stacking.
I said stacking. God damn it, Asian kid with cups. I'm just going to make a video of me, like, throwing around a bunch of cups. Not really, just, like, click a stopwatch, but great job, buddy. Let's do this a million more times, and you'll be as good as that kid on YouTube. Great. Unless there's any other events, IPL qualifiers just got announced literally like before the show begins. Any other events that people should be keeping on the radar that you guys are playing in? Or
Masters Cup will be coming out fairly soon. Right now there's the IPL Team League, there's the NASTL Team League, and there's the MLG qualifiers coming up. Total Biscuits hosting, like he's already said, that he's going to do a Shoutcraft 5 and 6. So
hell yeah, man.
Those are 8-man invitationals with new ideas and huge prize monies. You can tip the players, which really is a great way to support them. It is tournament season, dude. It is absolutely tournament season. So, like, January is kind of slow. We've had Kiev and Homestray Cup a while ago, but then it's going to be like, boom, every month there's 3 big-ass tournaments, and can't wait.
Yeah, those are the months you all know, you know, the ones where we cancel the shows, like, consistently. Yeah, I know. It sucks, guys. I'm trying to figure out a way to make that a little bit better. But anyway, let's go ahead and begin to open up the phone lines here. As anything and everything, you've got EG machine. You got a Zerg here. You've got EG in control. You've got a Protoss. You want to talk about anything general, but it's not very often you get an opportunity to actually chat with these guys. So we'll open up the Skype. You can hit us up on Skype at DJ Wheat, or you can telephone 909-581-8519. And we're going to take the first call here. We've got Steven on the line. Steven, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. Big fan here, both of you. Actually, all three of you. On Inside the Game, you guys are talking about the SteelSeries grubby issue and how in control, you and Tyler are having a debate on how you can't exactly see who generates the most, like, products for SteelSeries or Razer. Well, I actually, like, sent you a message earlier in control about, like, how maybe, like, SteelSeries, when you buy a product, you, there's a drop-down box that says, where did you hear about us? And they could be, like, Evil Geniuses, Fnatic, and whatnot. So, if I bought, like, a SteelSeries Sensei, I could give that purchase to Evil Geniuses.
Does that make sense?
So what is your question?
Steven, can you hear them okay?
Yeah, I hear them.
Okay, so what was that just your point about it, or did you have a question specifically for In Control?
Do you think that'd be a good idea?
Oh, yeah, it's a phenomenal idea. I mean, I think that's good for both sides, right? Like, SteelSeries gets to get some analytics on where people hear about their products and then shop online. But then also, if they reference EG or Grubby, formerly, or somebody else, then that gives SteelSeries an opportunity to realize, oh, wow, our investment was worth our time and money, in that way at least. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. And you know what? Cam Rom is a friend of the show. Hopefully he's listening. If not, I'll definitely pass that along to him. I think that's a wonderful idea, dude.
I'm down with that, too. All right. Yeah. Steven, thank you very much for your call, man. Take care.
No problem.
Turn him down. Let's take another one. We've got Jack on the line. Hello, Jack. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, what's up? I was wondering what you guys think about team houses and how they affect the player skill levels and whether the next big step in the foreign scene is going to be pushing even more team houses out, like the EG layer, and I think Millennium have a team house in France as well. Do you think that's going to be the next big step to improving foreign players' practice attitude and general skill levels?
Bryce, you want to comment on that first?
Yeah, sure. Honestly, team houses are doing nothing but helping the players. Being able to, from someone who has experience with living in a team house, just being able to kind of submerge yourself in StarCraft, I wake up every single day. I go over and say, hey, Jeff, you want to start practice in an hour? It's a lot easier to kind of motivate yourself when you're somewhere where you're particularly just purely focused on trying to practice. And, some days, like maybe if I was living on my own, I had my own apartment, I might have one of those lazy days where I wake up, I go to my computer, browse the web or something, and, eat and just watch a movie or something. But when I wake up and I walk into the room and I see Jeff, Ben, Greg, Puma, Chris, just like practicing, I'm not going to go to my computer and start just like watching a movie or a show or something. I want to practice. And, so I guess team houses really motivate you. And yes, as this game gets taken more seriously and more money gets involved, especially with all these big leagues, I think that teams are going to start realizing that, there's a lot of benefits by having these team houses, and we should see a lot more of them. In the U.S. right now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's just us and Rain at the moment.
I think for the most part, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I hope so, and I do think that we're going to see more houses here in the near future.
I mean, just speaking from the business side, part of the problem of having a international or even just a domestic team is the distance between players. So if I want to do a video and I'm Team Complexity's manager, like QXC generates a lot of interest, a lot of people are really cool following him, I have to go to California. But if I want to have him do a video with Katz, who is another really popular streamer, great player, then I got to go to Florida. And these two guys are in two separate places, so I got to fly them together. And that ends up being $3,000-$4,000, but I probably don't do that because I don't have the opportunity to. Or I do very, you know, I do a video there over Skype / mail-in video, and he does one. But then it looks, you know, it looks
right.
It looks as bad as it sounds. So if you have a team house, if you bring your players together, you have the option and ability to produce content. That's a big part of the reason why we're here in Phoenix. Sir Scoots has a wonderful studio where we're able to make tips and tricks videos. We're able to produce, hopefully we'll do some commentating from there as well to just kind of up the ante in terms of quality.
It's a great point, Jeff. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I just want to just quickly just throw out there. I don't mean to interrupt, but I mean,
no, it's okay.
I think that that way of thinking is really smart because obviously the practice part comes in, but right, another thing that's important, and you can't really be involved with StarCraft and not see this, right? Branding, marketing, sort of a player's awareness to the community or the community's awareness of the players. Like right. The ability to create this content, whether it be, you know, guys, even like the Kingston commercials, like that to me is like one of the most amazing partnerships right there. Yeah, obviously the hardware is phenomenal, but Kingston like backs this team enough that they want to make promotional videos and advertisements around them that I like as a community member, I'm like, oh my God, this is hilarious. You know, like I can relate to this or whatever. I show a buddy that to me is the start of what I think we need to be seeing more and more of.
And I mean, again, to the business side, when you have your team all together, it's more inexpensive. Yes, you're paying for the house, but also we're flying out of the Phoenix hub. We're all together. We're able to travel together, so it cuts down on costs that way. When our team needs to communicate or know about what we're doing, we're all in the same place. So it just it streamlines everything. It makes it more effective. A big part of the way a team makes its money is the ROI on content that we produce. Like misunderstanding that people have is the only way a team makes money is if their players win. Not the case at all. Those players need to make content. They need to generate interest. They need to represent their sponsors. And if they're in a pro gaming house, they're able to streamline and do that at a higher level, which means you're going to make more money, so you have more money to spend. So I think pro gaming houses, as esports, more specifically StarCraft II, continues to grow, we're going to see more of those big dog teams start to invest in places where they can centralize their efforts and really start to make a more of an impact, leave their footprint on the world in terms of esports.
All great points. And hopefully, caller, that answered a little bit of your question. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Man, cheers.
I know, Ben says that, man.
Yeah, DeMuslin would have been right at home, man.
He would have, man.
Like, awesome. Take another caller. We've got Chris on the line. Chris, welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good.
Hello. So I met both of you, Machine and In Control, at Providence, In Control. I'm actually, I was with the guy who gave you the Warhammer figure, so.
Oh, sick, thanks, say, dude.
Just wanted to say, big fans, I have a question about gas, in-game, in all matchups. We don't see, like, a lot of fakes where people would get gases at the natural instead of the main, just to play games with the opponent, like, timing-wise, and I think it actually happened to Idra in GSL, where Lucky, like, took his gases in the natural, and then all of a sudden came across the map with, like, a Roachling all in. So why don't we see more pros do that? Because there's a lot of Terrans who just don't get their gas at their natural until it's, like, really predictable, and I'm just wondering why we don't see that more, because it's a simple thing to do, you know?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I mean, think of the flip side. Part of the reason why taking gas is cool is because it throws off their build, what they had, you know, in their head in terms of what they were going to do. By taking their gas, you potentially shifted that away from that. So it's kind of a mental game that way, but also it allows you to check things off your list that you can expect, right? If I steal the gas of a Terran player, I'm not expecting super fast Cloak Banshee. I'm not expecting Blue Flame Hellion. Not that you would ever expect that, I guess. But the point I'm trying to make is it limits what they could potentially do. But on the flip side, if I spend the money to steal their gas, that also takes things away from my build. People don't have like an extra 100 minerals figured into their build. So that's why some people are reluctant to do it, but this is a great opportunity for me to say, and hopefully people pick up on this, I think if a Terran ever builds their barracks next to an empty gas and they've taken the other gas, you absolutely have to steal that gas. Because then you'll actually see if they put a tech lab on it or a reactor or nothing at all. So there's nice little opportunities like that, but also like in PvP, if you steal someone's gas, they're not going to tech, so now they can only 4-gate, expand, or maybe 1-gate robo. Or Blink Stalker, I suppose. But again, it limits options.
Okay.
You're, Wait, you're not. Are you talking about gas stealing or just taking the gas, your own gases at your natural instead of your main? Is that what you meant?
Taking your own gases. Well, gas stealing too, but taking your own gases at the different bases just to throw off timings in people's brains.
Honestly, from a Zerg player's perspective, this is something I've actually thought about, and I find it very scary. You'll typically find on most maps, like a map like Shakira's Plateau, it's much easier to scout the Vespian geysers at your opponent's natural than it is inside their main. You know, because first off, both Vespian geysers at most naturals are actually placed like right next to each other for whatever reason, and you're used to just having an opponent, just take the gas in their main at the start of a game. So. Yeah. There, honestly, I can't really think of a reason, because you're exactly right. If players did start getting used to taking both the Vespian guys at their natural, you know, I'm not sure if actually the timings would quite work out that great for Protoss. They might have to at least take one gas from their main, not their natural. But a Terran player, sure enough, could just go one rack CC, take the Vespian guys at their natural, and it would completely throw off the Zerg's build to where you'd find that most Zergs now would have to go ahead and sacrifice an Overlord just, you know, have that safe scout and make sure that they, you know, did in fact just take the naturals or the Vespian guys as their natural instead of their main. So, you know, there's no real great answer to this. I think Terrans and Protoss players should start mixing it in.
All right, that's all I got.
What you said.
Thank you, Chris, for your call. Sorry. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude. Intelligent callers ask great questions. Let's do it. All right, we're going to take a telephone call here. Let's take area code 414. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hi, yeah. I had a question about how much time do you think has to be spent to play at your level of StarCraft? Like,
well, to play at my level of StarCraft, you've got to spend approximately 2 hours. Wait, you're asking those guys. I gotcha. Guys, how long? What's the dedication hours looking like for you guys?
Honestly, it's a pretty scary amount of hours if I think of at least the amount of time I've spent playing games like this. I don't think, you know, I think that StarCraft is a game you can build yourself into. It's not impossible. But much like ourselves, you really kind of have to saturate yourself completely by the game. You can't, you know, have a full-time job, you know, a girlfriend, you know, go to school part-time and, you know, try to play StarCraft 2 and be a professional. There's a reason why we live in this house, and this is, you know, what we eat and sleep every single day. You really have to concentrate, I'm guessing, at least a good 6 hours a day, every single day, 7 days a week, to the game in order to play at a top level.
How much do you think you would have to play, like, per day or per week to not play at, like, a level like yours or in controls, but still be fairly good and, you know?
Like, competent? I understand. You know, I think at least initially you have to spend a good 5-6 hours a day, but in order to kind of just keep refreshed with the game and stay up, I'd say 1 hour a day, you could do it, 1 to 2 hours a day, probably a good, like, 5 to 7 games, and you could, you know, keep the mechanics, keep the builds, and as long as you're watching streams and such every once in a while, you could kind of hang in with it, but in order to improve, it takes a quite a difference in time difference.
Can I kind of ask you guys an offshoot of the caller's question, and that's just quite frankly, do you feel like in addition to the time put in that there are individuals that just frankly pick up the game quicker?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, here's the other thing too, that I mean, the first and foremost alienating factor about StarCraft 2 is the time factor. So your question's not like totally off base. It's, you know, If you can't play because you have a family and a job and you're going to school or something like that, then there is a limiting factor there. But it's also how you spend that time. So if you have access to guys that are 5 times better than you, or you're friends with this pro gamer, or, you know, I don't know, just things like that, your time's going to be spent faster, right? So you don't need the 10 hours a day. Maybe it's like 5 or 6. But if you're just by yourself, you don't know anybody, and you're just picking up the game, then you need more time because you're spending the time less effectively. So those are factors as well.
Yeah, good point.
Right. Excellent. All right, caller, thank you very much for your call.
Yep.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yep. Let's take another phone call. Let's take area code 336. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello. Today I was on Team Liquid, and there's a thread about hypothetically moving GSL to the United States.
Oh, this is actually interesting. Okay. Go ahead.
And I was just wanting to see how you guys would think it would be moving GSL to America.
It's actually interesting that you bring this up because I was just talking to someone the other – just like, again, in a hypothetical situation, I was like, you know, I wonder what would happen if GSL was just over here. Like, you know, they had such great success. Granted, it was at BlizzCon. That's kind of a stacked crowd, if you will, right? But I think people were genuinely excited to go to see a GSL final. So I think that logistically speaking, it might cost a lot of money. But at the same time, it could be really interesting. I would love to see maybe the final rounds of a GSL try to test the waters a little bit. I don't think committing to a season would be something worthwhile, but I'd love to hear Machine and Control, your guys' thoughts on this.
Really cool idea. I mean, I think it takes root in the idea that StarCraft II is not doing as well in Korea as it is abroad. And I think the most logical place you'd ever move something to continue the high production and also, you know, garner that foreigner scene would be America, North America as opposed to somewhere else. So that all sounds pretty sound and logical. What I'd be really concerned about is that we're removing the only StarCraft II league from Korea, where StarCraft and RTS in general is just really, really sacred and very important, right? The best players are still in Korea. The tradition, the excitement is still in Korea. You're still going to get audience members that are excited about StarCraft II there. We're not hitting the Brewer numbers yet.
Can I throw a banana peel out there? Let me just see what you think about this in Control. Right? Yeah. Like, for us, that being in Korea, there's, like, the mysticism of it all, right? But now, in Korea, the culture has gotten a grasp of, holy shit, like, I can travel the world and do this. So don't you think there's maybe even, like, some sort of a motivating factor that might get more people interested in competing or attempting to compete if it meant, like, going to the United States and living for a month to compete?
My fear is that you're removing the incentive for young Korean players to want to develop themselves. Like, if you added another tier to their progression, like right now, if I am an up-and-coming Korean player, I can talk to someone in my home city and then travel to that house and get a tryout and play there. But if you remove the GSL from Korea, there's going to be a lot of people who will look at that as a situation where they're like, maybe I get good enough where they eventually fly me to America so I can eventually play in that big league, or maybe I don't and I waste time. I think what we could all agree on is that to a certain extent, it would at least start to add the cancerous tumor of doubt in the Korean StarCraft II scene.
Yeah.
And it would probably grow into a situation where Korean players are a dying breed as opposed to a robust growing base of people.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. That's a very good point. Caller, did that kind of answer your question? What do you think?
Yeah, I just think it would be pretty sweet to see how it would move into, like, L.A. or New York, one of those areas, a big area that has a lot of fans. And I just wanted to see how y'all thought it would react if that could happen.
It would definitely be interesting, but I have a feeling we won't be seeing it necessarily anytime soon. I bet you they'll do another final over here, for sure.
I would love that, to be able to go to one of those. So.
All right, man. Thank you very much for your call. Take care.
Thank you for taking me. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. We got Scott on the line. Scott, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, one second, let me mute the stream real quick.
Okay, thank you, sir, for muting the stream.
First of all, huge fan of all you guys.
Thank you.
I've got a couple questions. One of them is really quick, so we'll get out of the way really quickly. I know you tweeted about this suite. What are your guys' opinions on Adam Mr. Snibbles Farrington?
his video? I don't know. It seems like a pretty nice enough guy, and You're talking about the video where he lost, right?
Press the fucking button.
Yeah, where he loses and he basically like breaks down.
Press
and starts
the fucking button.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I've done that once or twice. It really, like, that's kind of the mindset you have to have if you really do want to become great at this game. You're going to lose, and you learn the most with each loss. If you go and you play ladder and you win 30 games in a row, you're not going to learn anything.
Right.
You have to be able to take those losses and just continue losing and keep driving on. I remember when I first started trying to play Brood War competitively, Brood War was merciless. I probably lost hundreds of games in a row before
thousands.
Like, and you kind of just, you know, have to deal with it and learn to, like, you know, be able to just, like, live with yourself being able to lose that many games in a row and try to take everything you can from every single loss. So we've all been there. But, you know, I think to me it's a sign of a player who has the potential to become great, because he can just sit there and he can just keep losing and playing, and then, you know, eventually he's just going to
push the fucking button, man.
Yeah, he's going to push the fucking button, man. He's going to get it.
Just push it.
Yep.
I just posted it in chat. For those of you that still can't find it, or maybe you're watching the VOD later, if you go to Team Liquid and...
Just search Mr. Snibbles.
There you go.
My second question, which is actually, you know, related to esports. I was talking with someone off FXO recently, and they were saying that specifically for FXO, and I'm sure this is true of other organizations, it's more of a passion project, and even like Total Biscuit said this, there's not as much money as there maybe should be. Like, you look at, even if you look at player salaries, only the very top players or those on really big teams are really getting paid enough to pursue the game full time. So what do you guys think about that as far as, is there enough sponsorship in the sport right now? Do you think it's sustainable? And overall, like, to bring it back to FXO, they were saying, like, they're not making money on this right now. So do you guys think that that StarCraft as an esport is sustainable, I guess is what I'm asking?
StarCraft and playing games competitively has never been a get-rich-quick type of thing. It's something that people feel very strongly about and are passionate about. And, like, there's no fucking guy out there who's like, yeah, got a job as a StarCraft player. Like, you wouldn't fucking believe, right? The shit I have to deal with and come home. Like, nobody's doing that. What everyone's doing is they're trying to justify what they want to do, okay? So I want to play StarCraft. And if I can get paid for that, if I can gain notoriety, if I can justify that, then I'm going to do it. And that's what everyone should be trying to do. There's varying degrees of success. But at the end of the day, if there's anyone out there that's so fucking stupid they don't know that we're playing a game for a living and they're upset because they're not getting rich, then they're in the wrong business. If a company thinks that they can make billions of dollars by paying people to play video games, then they're in the wrong business. The mega teams like an EG and some of these other organizations, maybe an FXO someday, are going to look for ways, they're going to look for ideas, they're going to try to find ways to make money, and if they can, then they're going to have a successful business. That's the way it goes. But there's nobody who's like running, there's nobody kicking down the door at the Microsoft office going, guys! If we just buy a StarCraft II team, we'll make billions of dollars! Like, there's nobody doing that. So it's just another form of business.
Well, there was one guy, but he got fired.
So. Yeah, well, he's out of there.
Yeah,
so, I mean, for FXO to be like, you know, we need more sponsorships and we're not making enough money, and then it's kind of like, then what the heck? I mean, this is taking out of context. So I'm assuming – I'm actually going to stop myself because I'm assuming he wasn't complaining that way.
No, the idea is this is the beginning.
We need to be in it for the long haul. You establish name brand right now. You branch off into an Intel tournament. You start talking to this other company, and then they want to pay you big parts of money to network and get your names out there, and that's how you make the money.
Okay, to follow up on that as far as the money is concerned, what do you think about the fact that basically it's only like the top pro players are really getting paid the money that they really need to play like professionally? Like, you look at players like... was it Dragon who retired recently? And he's, like, only streaming, and he's... Or is that Golden? One of them, anyways. And, like, there's all these Korean players that are, like, code B, but they're not making any money at all.
Yeah.
And it's just... Do you think that
that's the market? It would blow people away how much money some of these players make. Like, I know numbers, but I won't say it, obviously. But some of the top-tier players out there on organizations are very happily playing this game on a regular basis, but they're playing in a tournament that has a prize pool that's 15 times what they make in 6 months or something like that. You know, like, it's absolutely... It's fascinating as far as I'm concerned. But that's where the market's at, too. Like, it's weird to, like, I don't know. This is going to be a bad example. Someone's going to end up hating me after I say this, but that's fine. I'm willing to do that. Like, it's weird to me when people make the complaint to me, like, that's how they're like, you need to tip more because that's how that person makes their money. And, like, that's a weird complaint to me because that person signed up for that job knowing that they're going to get a salary or they're going to get paid an hourly wage or whatever, but they're also going to make some money from a tip. So it's weird to be upset that they're not making more money for this thing that they signed into. So if I'm going to play StarCraft professionally, like I just got done saying, there shouldn't be anyone out there who's like, God damn it, I won that tournament. Why am I not making $70,000 a year? Like, that's just not how it works. And maybe someday we'll get there, or maybe things will happen like they did in Warcraft 3, where the salaries got inflated and actually collapsed in on itself. So we in the StarCraft 2 community have to be very careful.
So you don't think that the bubble is in danger of popping, basically?
Not yet.
No, I don't say it's in danger. I said that the decisions people make and the information they base their actions on need to be educated. So history teaches us that we can't just start paying every player an exuberant amount of money at this current time because that'll collapse the teams that are actually the only reason those players are getting money. But also, moving forward in the future, players should get paid what they deserve, right? So if Idra goes to a tournament, it's like 25,000 extra eyes on that tournament, right? That guy's going to make more money than a nameless Korean player who's really, really freaking good, has won amazing stuff, but he's not grabbing the people to the tournament. He's not the ROI. So that's why you start justifying salaries, and that's why some guys can look at a player who's really good in Korea and say, why is he getting paid less than a Stefano?
Right, right. Yeah. Obviously, also the embracing of the streaming and the ability to at least, like, find other ways.